Well, lots of news to discuss, including Michael Dunn's retrial, city budget news, Florida state news, and other stories. But we want to begin with something happening right now, an announcement happening as we speak at the Jacksonville Chamber of Commerce. The company GE Oil and Gas has announced it's opening up a plant in Jacksonville, creating hundreds of jobs. Give us a call as we discuss the top stories of the week at 549-2937. John Burr, let's begin with you. This has been dubbed Project Speed.
Project Speed, yeah. I'm not sure where the speed comes in, but it's a very big deal for Jacksonville. GE Oil and Gas is involved with the manufacturing of machinery that has everything to do with the extraction and transportation of oil and natural gas. So if you can start to see the puzzle pieces fitting together in terms of the liquid natural gas business that's been talked about for about a year now in Jacksonville.
David, the LNG liquid natural gas business has been seen as a growing field in this part of the state.
Right. In fact, I believe yesterday JTA decided they were going to try to partner with Clean Energy to move forward on a project for that. But this GE Oil and Gas, I mean, it's a big project, especially for up at Cecil Field. They're going to be bringing 500 jobs, which is, like I said, a big deal, and it's manufacturing, which economic development officials have been trying for a long time to get more up here.
Cliff Davis, A.G. Gankarski, the governor is on hand at this announcement, along with a lot of other officials. Obviously, everyone wants to be part of this positive news for Jacksonville.
Sure, yeah. It's funny because just yesterday I was out at near the airport for the Embraer revealing of the Super Tucano fighter plane over there, and there was everybody was there, Mayor Brown, Andrew Crenshaw. So I'm sure we'll see a lot of the same faces today.
And these are manufacturing jobs, AG. It's good news.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, we're competing with a lot of different markets for these kind of jobs. It's a good get. Cecil needs the industry. And, you know, as we expand the port and, you know, move forward in that, this is really something that's going to be instrumental to Jacksonville's future.
So yeah. Go ahead, John.
And AG really touched on it there. It's not just this one project. It's how it fits into the natural gas growing industry in Jacksonville. We've got Sempra here. We've got Clean Energy here. That's Boone Pickens' company. Now we've got GE Oil and Gas that makes all kind. Actually, one of the things they do is they build LNG plants from scratch. Mm. So you can see that this is really, really gaining momentum now.
David.
And I was going to say, it also shows that the city's willing to invest. Of the $15.4 million in incentives that the company is getting, 10 of it's coming from the city of Jacksonville. So that's, if it's not the largest incentive deal, it's one of the largest.
And give us a call with your thoughts as we discuss the top stories of the week here on our Friday Media Roundtable. The number to join us, 549-2937. Also making news this week, jurors heard opening statements and several witnesses for the prosecution Thursday in the closely watched retrial of Michael Dunn. Dunn is being tried again on a first-degree murder charge in the death of 17-year-old Jordan Davis. Yesterday, Assistant State Attorney John Guy said Dunn fired out his car window into an SUV with teenagers inside after exchanging words over loud music. Then prosecutors say he got out into a crouch and fired another 7 shots as the SUV pulled away. But the defense attorney for Dunn told the jury that her client acted instinctively to protect himself from an angry young man who he believed was pointing a shotgun at him. Dunn, of course, is already going to be serving decades in prison for other convictions. This is a retrial on the first-degree charge. We want your calls. Give us a call at 549-2937. A.G. Gankarski, you interviewed a juror that was not chosen, or a candidate for the jury that was not chosen to sit on the jury, correct?
Correct. And he was actually a former Folio writer, and one of the reasons he was disqualified was because Folio had written some adversarial stuff about Angela Corey in the past. It's an interesting thing because, you know, the people who got picked for the jury tended to be gun owners, tended to be people with families. That seemed to be the sweet spot for both the prosecution and defense on it.
Interesting. And let me ask you about this, Cliff. According to the JSO, all of this evidence is going to be brought out again. JSO saying they never found a gun in or near the SUV Jordan Davis was in. Dunn was convicted in February of three counts of attempted murder, but they deadlocked infamously, of course, on the murder charge. He's already going to serve at least 60 years in prison.
Right.
This is an attempt to get another conviction on that first-degree murder charge.
Right. It's interesting because I know there's a large faction out there that, you know, wants to see a conviction on the first-degree murder charge. But, you know, Mark O'Meara wrote today that it's going to be a tough sled, again, for the prosecution, that if they don't have any new evidence, that it's going to be hard for them to prove that.
Yeah. What about that? What do you think, John and David? Did they overcharge this, as some have alleged?
Yes. I mean, that was the overwhelming sentiment coming out of the first trial from the legal community, not from me, but from the legal community, was that it had been Dunn had been overcharged, and you know, they decide to try again.
The big thing I want to know is what's going to be different this time than it was last time. What's going to get it to that next level, I guess you could say.
Right, with the same evidence coming
right.
forward again.
Correct.
Exactly. Well, we'll continue to follow it. That trial is just now getting underway at the Duval County Courthouse, and we want your calls about that story and all the top stories of the week. Give us a call, 549-2937. Okay, let's talk about the budget for a minute. The Jacksonville City Council worked into the wee hours Tuesday night, finalizing next year's $1 billion budget for the city, and they restored some cuts to vital services that were slated to be on the chopping block. Meanwhile, some council members complained that as they were working to pass the budget, Mayor Alvin Brown was in New York at a fundraiser for his reelection campaign, headlined by none other than Bill Cosby. Do you think that's worthy of criticism or not? Give us a call with your thoughts about that, 549-2937. Lots of discussion about that one. Mm-hmm. Cliff.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot about, you know, what people call optics. Somewhat similar to the, you know, President Obama saluting the Marines the other day with a cup of coffee in his hand, which for those that don't know is totally against any kind of protocol there is. But, you know, Mayor Brown, traditionally mayors haven't attended these meetings, but him being in New York, someone should have known that was not going to look good as the budget's being poured over, you know.
Right. And in this election year, of course, his likely opponent, Lenny Curry, should he win the Republican nomination, wasted no time trying to make hay out of this.
No, he was all on it from the start. But to be fair, I mean, Bill Cosby's got better routines than Bill Bishop does, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, there's no comparison there. Bishop's more deadpan, a Bob Newhart kind of style. But I don't think this is going to be remembered by the time we actually get to the general election because, you know, considering, you know, Brown had this fundraising meeting planned in advance. He had this trip planned in advance. You know, it was hard for him to get out of it. And I talked to somebody from the mayor's office who said he was actually back in town by the time the budget had been approved. So he went up there and got back to Jacksonville before business was actually done.
This was a meeting at the Harvard Club with Bill Cosby, former New York Mayor David Dinkins. Some pretty big names came out for Alvin Brown.
Yeah. And, you know, what's he going to do? Those people all have incredibly busy schedules. What is he going to do? No, I got to go to the city council meeting where they're not going to ask me anything. They hate my guts and they're not going to take my advice even if I could offer it. So, you know, come on, really.
Right.
David.
I was actually there for every painful minute of the budget on Tuesday and Wednesday morning. And
My condolences.
Word started coming out about it about in the first hour, 2 hours into it. And they took a few recesses, and you could tell council members just were not happy whatsoever. One of them told me it was just completely disrespectful that he wasn't there. Another one called it a slap in the face for, you know, taxpayers of the city. And it was pointed criticism, but as some people say, it's not their responsibility to always be there. But to their point, they said at least they were in the building and in the city if they ever needed anything. But yeah, it was, you could tell the rumblings were there.
It just seems like he's being held to a higher standard on this than, you know, Peyton, than Delaney, than previous mayors. And, you know, yes, this was a contentious budget session. There's a lot of disagreement, but, you know, Brown's being held to a standard that other mayors have not been held to.
And what is that standard?
Well, you know, he wouldn't have been in the chambers if he had been in town anyway. I mean, point in fact, he just would not have been there because that's just not how it's done. I saw Kevin Mearshart, he actually posted to Facebook, and all of his time covering council meetings, he never saw a mayor in chambers, you know, when the budget was actually decided. So, You know, there's kind of a disingenuous feeling about, you know, sort of, you know, this publicity campaign.
And, you know, there's been a lot of animosity toward the mayor and the city council. For 2 years now, the council claims that the mayor has handed them a really unworkable budget.
That's the larger issue, not this trip to New York. There's resentment over that.
That's right. And made the council come up with budgets that were politically unfavorable and just dumped this mess in their lap. And so there's incredible animosity against the mayor in city council right now.
We want your calls on all the top stories of the week, 549-2937. Let's go to Doran on the west side. Hi, Doran. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Melissa. I wanted to just comment on the Dunn and Jordan Davis case. I wanted to just say that I'm not optimistic that there'll be much of a different outcome, but I think all of us should take the opportunity to learn from it. What entitles any of us to say to someone else in a public venue, your music offends me, and then insist that they change it? I mean, if the music were Mozart, would Mr. Davis have been equally offended? And even if he had, if the proprietors of the public venue didn't insist that the other customer make a change, then what right did Mr. Davis have? Dunn have. So I think it's a question of restraint. When a 47-year-old man is speaking to a 17-year-old child, I think the 47-year-old is responsible to be more mature and back down when he sees that the more immature person isn't being cooperative. And I think that's the lesson for us. It's a tragic lesson, but I think it's an important one.
Thanks for the call, Doran. Well, certainly that's what the prosecution's going to be arguing again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whether it's Michael Dunn, the city budget, or whatever's on your mind, we want your calls right now on our Friday Media Roundtable as we discuss the biggest news stories of the week. And you might have heard about this one. Over the strong objections of some faculty and students, State Senator John Thrasher, who hails from our neck of the woods, was chosen Tuesday as the new president of Florida State University. The FSU board saying Thrasher is the best choice to secure funding for the school. The First Coast politician was controversial, though, among academics. They argued that he did not have the academic credentials needed to lead a major state university. We want to know, what are your thoughts about State Senator John Thrasher's successful bid to become FSU president? Give us a call at 549-2937. John Thrasher's an attorney, got his undergraduate and law degrees from FSU. He's seen by the board as with his contacts in Tallahassee and business groups to be able to really bring in the money, which, of course, is always a consideration at a university. What do you think, though, about the pushback that he received?
Well, I think it's predictable. Academic faculty never like it when somebody from outside the academic world is promoted to that to run a university. That it's always the same criticism. This person is not like us. He doesn't know how we operate. He comes from another culture. He's not serious about academic. You hear this again and again and again. And in this case, you have the political dynamic, which inflames people even more.
Well, it's interesting because here in Jacksonville, we have a former mayor running UNF. We have a former CEO now running JU. Neither had the type of academic background that you would normally expect. There wasn't this kind of pushback, though, when John Delaney and Tim Koss took the helms of UNF and JU. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think both of them have received positive reviews for their tenure so far.
Yeah, I think it's two different things, because John Thrasher has been really important in the mechanics of Florida GOP politics.
Right.
Delaney was seen as a competent managerial type politician. Thrasher's the kind of person who is more likely to throw out Republican talking points, which the largely Democratic students and faculty wouldn't appreciate. But here's the reality about a university president. He's there to get funding for the institution. And FSU, in a very competitive environment, with Florida obviously being in the premier state school and other schools, the directional schools like USF, UNF, coming up very quickly. And what FSU wants is to be in the top 25 nationally in terms of funding. And Thrasher's selection, unlike all the other people being considered, is probably the most likely way to get there.
Mm-hmm. Cliff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I think it probably also shows the disconnect between students and faculty and the board. I mean, you know, as y'all said, the board is worried about raising money. The students and faculty, as AJ said, is largely Democratic, and especially someone who has a tendency to be a little bit of a lightning rod like John Thrasher is probably going to raise the ire a little bit, but it might tell us something about, you know, the makeup of college campuses these days.
David Chapman.
Yeah, I actually agree with John when he said that, you know, often when a non-academic person comes into the academic world, there's going to be some pushback, but I mean, his track record in terms of fundraising speaks for itself. The man can raise some money.
You know, and Melissa, I gotta jump in a little bit and disagree with you. When Delaney was first proposed for the president of UNF,
there was criticism.
There was criticism, okay. And there was pushback from the faculty along the same lines you're hearing about Thrasher. He's not from academia. It's just a political plum job for him. And you know, you'd be hard pressed today to find somebody who would say that John Delaney hasn't been anything but a godsend for UNF.
He's right. Won those naysayers over for sure. And I think we found our talker for the day. Lots of calls on this topic. Let's go to Keith in Mandarin. Hi, Keith. Go ahead.
Hi. I don't want to talk about anything that's on today, but I do want to talk about 2 weeks ago. I was listening, and when I got to my destination, I got in the elevator, and the lady said, "How are you doing?" And I said, "Well, my blood pressure is up. I've been listening to First Coast News." And she said, "Oh, my gosh. My dad used to listen to that and had raised his blood pressure so much, we kept trying to get him not to listen." And finally, the doctor told
me. You're talking about First Coast News or First Coast Connect?
Oh, I'm sorry, First Coast Connect.
Why are we raising your blood pressure? Because we don't want you in the hospital, Keith.
It's a controversial issue. A lot of issues are controversial on the program.
Uh-huh.
And so that's why people can get real upset about them.
Well, sure. But, hey, we're here to facilitate the discussion on whatever the controversy of the day is. Let's go to Autumn in Orange Park. Hi, Autumn. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi there. I actually wanted to go back to a comment someone made off the cuff, and I'm not sure who it was. I'm sorry. It's about the president making a salute with his hand, with a coffee in his hand.
Right.
That's actually not required of a president. If you look, if you Google it, actually General Eisenhower didn't even do it. Ronald Reagan was the first president to do that.
Right.
He's not required to do that.
Yeah,
I just think there's a disparity between, and I think it's something that we should draw a conclusion between the way the mayor is held to a higher standard as well as the president.
Thanks for that, Autumn.
That's an interesting thing.
I'm getting emails from people showing me a picture of George Bush saluting while he's holding a dog. So I guess people
on Daily Show.
I guess people feel that there's an unfairness there. And thank you for that call. And lots of calls. Let's go to Foster in Switzerland. Hi, Foster. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. I had 2 points to make, and I'm a registered Republican. But I'm very happy that they gave John Thrasher the job, not because I'm a Republican. I'm very unhappy with the Republican Party. I'm happy because it will take him out of politics, where I find him very dangerous to our state. And I also think there's nobody better suited to raise money than a politician. They raise billions of dollars for nothing. So I think for a good cause, he might raise money, and we got him out of the government.
That's Foster in Switzerland. All right. Thanks for the call.
Yeah. I mean, look, John Thrasher knows how to pull the levers in Tallahassee. There's no question about that. Can he help FSU? He can help FSU immensely. Will he help FSU immensely? Well, we'll just have to see. I think it's a foregone conclusion he's going to get the job.
I mean, it's basically a done deal. There, right. In November, it will formally be done.
That's
but,
right.
But yeah, we want to know your thoughts. 549-2937, Bud in St. Augustine. Hi, Bud.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks. Go ahead.
I would like to note that John Thrasher is not from St. Augustine, although it does say that in his bio. I believe he's from Orange Park. I just think it's odd that the guy who... at the beginning of this great financial crisis, his big proposal was to turn all of our state parks into golf courses, is now going to be running Florida State. Probably a year from now, we'll be hearing talking about on your show all the Koch brothers' money that he was able to secure for Florida State, you know, with certain strings attached. I'll just take your comments off the air.
That's Bud in St. Augustine. AG, the politics of this have been a factor all along.
Yes, but the operational reality is this. Faculty's got to be paid, staff's got to be paid, pensions have to be paid, research facilities have to be funded. So if he gets the money from the Koch brothers, the Pepsi brothers, whomever, you know, it's money. It's going toward university, it's going toward developing facilities. And we've seen what John Delaney did at UNF. He transformed that place. And the bet that FSU is making is that John Thrasher can do something similar.
Eric, or excuse me, Peter in Arlington. Hi, Peter, what are your thoughts?
Well, about John Thrasher as well, you know, it just seems odd to me that one of the chief legislators in trying everything that they could to dismantle public education, including higher education, is the one who's going to be in charge of FSU. That's just blows my mind away.
Thanks for the call, Peter. And I'm sure that's why you saw the academics rising up so strongly on campus. They didn't feel that this person values academia. That was the tone of the criticism anyway. Eric on the South Side. Go ahead, Eric.
Good morning. Melissa,
hey.
Maybe we need more of our grandpa's cough medicine to lower people's blood pressure when they call it.
You know, if I could, I would have them as our house band every single day. That would be great.
Well, I enjoyed your One Spark show, and I look forward to it again next year when you were down there.
Thank you.
Downtown with them. I'm not sure about the transformation of UNF with John Delaney. He doubled his salary from $250,000 to $10,000 a week. It is... it's evidence to me the politicalization of the universities, and maybe their goal is to privatize these universities. I don't know, but you know, John Delaney and his predecessors were making more money than the president of the United States. I mean, where is he going to wind up in 5 or 10 years? $1 million a year? He's going to walk away with millions and millions of dollars. Something's wrong with that picture. And thanks for listening, Melissa.
All right, Eric, thanks for your thoughts. One more call on this. It's Dave on the South Side. Go ahead, Dave. All right, Dave, give us a call back. We want to make a couple of quick news and notes. Charlie Crist swung through Jacksonville today as part of his reelection campaign. And to much rejoicing, that new Fresh Market opened in Riverside, Brooklyn. Cliff Davis, right outside your doors, outside the Florida Times Union. I haven't been over there yet, but I heard it was packed.
Oh, yeah, and it's amazing. It truly is. From the time I started working there, you know, and the place was just empty. It looked like, to be honest, it looked like something out of Mad Max and Thunderdome over there with just, you
right.
know, the open
Blight.
Old roads.
Yeah,
sure, absolutely.
Sure. Yeah.
And you should have seen it before that.
And now it's, you know, it's awesome to see. It's great to see that area of town, which really has potential, I think, being that close to downtown, that close to the river. So many big businesses right there, you know, with Haskell and the Times Union, and just I think it has all the potential in the world, and it's great to see from someone like me that's a Jacksonville native that remembers, you know, things being a lot worse than they are now. So it's nice to see.
That whole area is really popping with the Unity Plaza development, the new Fresh Market. You've been covering that, David and John, and your publications. There's a lot going on, a lot of economic development in that part of town.
And it helps downtown. The closer all this development gets to downtown, the more it's going to spread into downtown. And there were some pretty interesting developments, you know, about developing historical buildings in downtown this week, too. So, all these things are looking very positive. I'm going to throw something out there. The Times Union sits on some very valuable property. They use about 10% of that building right now. That's going to go on the market sometime.
You think?
Times Union is not going to sit in that 90% empty building, which is worth a lot of money forever.
Your final thoughts on this one, David?
Well, I'm sure that some economic development officials would love to see the Times Union come actually downtown, since they're trying to do that so much. But no, it is a prime piece of real estate. You're right.
AG.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And I see the development of the Riverside Avenue area as something that the mayor's office is going to point to during the selection.
That's been under his tenure, yeah.
Yeah, I brought this up on the show many times. He's got to find an inroad to get his urban core support for this upcoming election, and I think that's going to be something he points to, you know, more so than the social issues, which he might get to in the second term.
James on the South Side. Hey, James, thanks for calling. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm going to go back, I guess, address my – I would like comments from the panel on pertaining to the larger issue of the budget. Basically, I think it gets back to them kicking that can down the road pertaining to the pension reform, because until we get pension reform, I think we're going to be dealing these budgets one thing at a time every year. So could you y'all panel comments on this for me? I appreciate y'all taking my call.
All right, James. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, thank you, James, for bringing that up. You're absolutely right. The pension reform and the lack thereof is the big fiscal issue in Jacksonville, and it's going to continue to keep eating away at the city budget until they fix it. And what does that mean? That means that things like money for downtown historic buildings isn't going to be around. There's not going to be any city money to help redevelop the Landing, and a whole host of things pertaining to city services. It's a huge problem, and it's got to get fixed.
Yeah, now that the budget has been passed, they'll turn their attention to this enormous problem, which, as everyone knows, has to get solved for the city to move forward.
Yeah, I mean, the pension issue is sort of like going around with a maxed out credit card and telling yourself you're solvent. The mayor's office is optimistic that they're going to have some resolution with JEA stepping forward and helping to resolve some of that. Time will tell if that actually happens. But the pension issue is going to be the thing hanging over the head of whoever's elected in the next election for sure.
David.
I was going to say, on that JEA topic, I know that they're still months away from coming forth with their with the $41 million or $40 million each year from coming up with a, can they do it or can they not? But, yeah, you guys are right. It's going to be hanging over the heads of everything the city does. And if you remember last year, the mayor with his budget also pitched pension reform at the same time. Council members said, no, we're not going to do that.
Right.
They nixed it. This year, not so much. So now it's just they're completely separate.
Which is probably a good thing. Cliff Davis.
Yeah, I mean, the Times Union had to sue over the right to sit in on this pension reform deal. And it's a huge deal. And on one hand, you want to respect the people that you've already promised a certain deal. And I have a feeling that if it does get reformed, it'll have to do with new hires. So any fix will probably be, we're looking at 20, 30 years down the road before we start reaping the benefits of it. But the sooner you get started, the sooner you see it.